It's time to shake out your money-making truth. You're listening to Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Have you ever wondered why some people work really hard for their money while others live lives of joy and abundance with seemingly little effort? You are about to learn powerful, tangible steps to shifting your mindset and connecting to your flow of money and abundance. Jennifer teaches you to connect to who you are at a soul level and how to use that connection to create a personal and specific relationship with money. Learn how money is a powerful tool to achieve your desires and your desires to then serve the world. So shake out your money-making truth right now. Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Jennifer Bloom, host of Soul Wisdom Abundance, Create Wealth Through Spiritual Health. And as always, I am thrilled and delighted that y'all are investing your time with us, with me and my guest in this next hour. And we're here, the big purpose of this podcast is to help you do money in a new way, to guide each of us into more consciously using our soul money relationship. And the reason why that's important is because when we do something in a more conscious way, when we are really working with that soul money relationship in a connected way, we're able to connect, we're able to create abundance and peace in a way that just isn't possible when we're operating out of our money wounds, our past stories, or scarcity, all of the things that are normal. All right, it's very typical to have all of that around money, but when we operate from there, we tend to create more pain and suffering. So, you know, one of the things I realized as I was putting the show together is I talk a lot about consciousness, conscious soul money relationship. We want to be conscious with money. And I haven't really ever said what I mean by that. And I think it's actually really important to the conversation we're having today. So I want to take a moment and just say that when I think about consciousness, when I think about being conscious with my money, it's about being in a space where I am very connected to the present moment, but through the eyes of the part of me that is of divinity, right? That part of me that understands that I'm part of a bigger whole, that part of me that understands what the divine believes about abundance and who I am when I get to be in a space of abundance. That to me is consciousness. I'm sure that those in the self-help industry, you know, there's a lot of different ways to define consciousness, but that's where we're going to start with it today. And it's really easy to notice the difference when you're conscious with money and when you're in a disconnected, unconscious space. And let me give you just a really simple example. Imagine going to the grocery store when you are tired and hungry and a little bit anxious and worried. And think about what you come home with in your bags as compared to when you go to the store having a well thought out list and you're on task and you're really excited, right? When you come home after being tired and anxious and hungry, you're going to look in your bag and you're either going to notice that you way overspent, right? You chose prepackaged things and sneaky snacks and all the things that we don't really want or need and we spend a lot of money on. Or maybe you notice that you come home with half the things that you originally intended because you either forgot or you were worried about what you were spending, right? So when we're in this conscious connected space, there's the ability to really feel a lot of trust and safety, and the decisions we make are really good, meaning they're decisions that we are happy to live with. But of course, we're human, right? And we have fear and we have worry and we have anxiety, particularly around money. And those of us who are trying to do things from a more spiritual place sometimes go, oh, those are bad. I don't want to create out of that. That's really, and so we push them aside, which of course never goes well either. And this is all leading up to introducing my guest because she is going to help us out of this quagmire and to really help us understand what's going on in our bodies when we're in that space of fear and worry and scarcity and what happens when we try, when we push it down instead of dealing with it. She's going to help us with a number of ways to deal with it so that we can get back into that space of consciousness. And I am thrilled that she's here. So let me introduce you. This is Rachel Posner. Rachel, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here today.
I am thrilled to be here. Really thrilled to be here. I'm like already excited. With everything you just said, I can just feel myself wanting to take a million notes.
Yeah, you know, so let me just tell people a little bit about you. So you're a yoga therapist, you're a mindfulness teacher, and you combine neuroscience, psychology, and mindfulness in your work to really allow this balance of between the mind and the body and the brain. And we could geek out for hours. I love the science behind all of this is fascinating. That I'm really excited about what you have to share with us today. Yeah. So tell you what, where should we start? Let's start in the space of what's going on in our bodies when we are in that place of fear, right? Because when we're talking, thinking about money, we can all identify times when we've felt like we're in a place of scarcity and we're worried and we're fearful. And we know we don't want to be there, but it's really hard to get out of. So can you talk a little bit about what's really going on
Yes.
in that space?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing that sort of comes up for me is as you're talking about conscious connection, all of that has to do with, in many ways, the nervous system. So when you talked at such a great example of the grocery store, and the two sides of that coin is, am I in my parasympathetic nervous system or am I in my sympathetic nervous system? And there's lots of words floating around for these two different sides. So I'll just say so that it can kind of resonate with whatever language your community has. The parasympathetic system is your relaxation response. It's often talked about in terms of the vagus nerve or vagal tone. It's being in a more relaxed state. And when you're in your sympathetic nervous system, fear turns on. So oftentimes that's called your stress response, fight or flight. The opposite of rest and digest. So these are kind of two sides of the same coin, just different language for it, depending on what you're starting with. And when you're in that sympathetic response, you are in your fear response. The thing that is a little bit tricky about it is that oftentimes we're in that all day long and we just don't know because it has become sort of second nature to feel this low level stress. So oftentimes I ask people on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your stress level? And I think that's important because it gives you a better gauge of what's normal for you. We can wind up all day long feeling kind of, let's say, at a 4, and then something little happens and suddenly we are at a 7. But if we started out at a 1, we wouldn't have jumped to that 7. So what's happening in your body is preparing you to fight or flee. And our brain is pretty vigilant. It's always looking for threats because it evolved to keep us alive. The problem is that these days, most threats are not life-threatening. So we see a threat as a child who can't find her shoes and we're late for work and we have a presentation. That is not a life-threatening event, but it is an event that throws us into fight or flight because our brain registers it as a kind of life-threatening event, as silly as that sounds. So that's what's happening physiologically. Your body, your brain is just preparing you for the worst, even though the worst is not what's in front of you. So it's like we get over-prepared and then we can't deal with the situation well because once we move into that fight or flight response, we're at a 7. Like you can't make good grocery shopping choices when you're at a 7, is basically what's going on.
Right. And are we, again, I don't want to dive too far into the science of it, but is it fair to say that sort of that frontal cortex, right, that part that's making a lot of decisions, when we have that, when we're bathing it in with all the sympathetic responses all the time, we can't get there, right? We can't be that functioning human that we're really used to being when that stress level is up.
Yeah, to be in conscious connection, you need to have your limbic system pretty much shut down. That's your amygdala, that's the alarm that sort of turns on. So when your sympathetic response turns on, your parasympathetic response turns off. You can't live with both. You're either in one or the other. So when you're in your prefrontal cortex, you're using your higher thinking. And that's just not possible when you're in fight or flight. So you have to find ways to turn that system on and turn the other one off. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. So it's basically like a muscle. The stronger your prefrontal cortex gets, the stronger your parasympathetic response gets, the weaker the sympathetic response gets, and vice versa. So the more time you spend stressed, the harder it is to get out of stress because you're really strengthening that system that brings you into that more vigilant state.
You know, as you say that, the image that I get, and again, this just demonstrates my age, but I think about a record, right? And if you play the same, like literally like a vinyl record with the needle, right? And playing it over and over, playing the same song over and over again, you get such deep grooves, right? That you end up, you can't play anything else because that groove is just so practiced. Right. And I think to circle back to what you said a little bit earlier is that we get used to it, right? We're so used to living at just a certain level of stress that we don't even notice that that's really what's going on in our body.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that groove you're talking about is a neural pathway. So this is why it's so important to bring the brain into the conversation, because every single feeling, thought, everything that moves through your awareness creates brain structure. So if all your feelings and thoughts are ones surrounded by stress or pessimism or whatever word you want to use, you're creating more and more neural pathways that reinforce that, that make it harder to jump out of that groove. And the more you work to rewire that by just dropping another thought, a different kind of thought, a different kind of sensation into that brain structure, the more you begin to rewire your brain to support the kind of states that you want to experience, calm, optimism, gratitude, whatever it is you're wanting to grow in your life.
Yeah. So what I'm curious about, and I want to go back to something that you and I talked about when we were planning this conversation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you said, and it has stuck with me since that time, is that we're often, let's see, I'm going to look exactly what was you said here, that you said that we are often asking questions before we can hear the answers. So for example, in my community, right, I want to be able to have abundance. I want to be able to be in a space of feeling really good about my money. I want to, right? And so we're wanting all of these ideas about, okay, how can I structure my business? How can I structure my mindset? But we haven't yet dealt with this underlying fear and worry. And so we're not really even able to get to where it is we want to go. And maybe this is just a synopsis of everything we've just been speaking about, but I'm curious about if you can add a little bit more to that, and then we can get into some talking about what do we do about this.
Yeah, I'd love to say more about that. I think that's exactly right. We have all these beautiful questions that we're asking, but if we're in that sympathetic or stress response, we're asking from a fear place. And we can't tap into that prefrontal cortex that can answer some of those questions from an abundance place. So we have all these wonderful ideas about abundance over scarcity, but if we're physiologically in a scarcity space, we are not going to get the abundance answer that we're looking for. We're in a place where our perspective is too narrow to see the big picture. And that's the other thing that happens in these two systems. When we're in our parasympathetic system, we have a much bigger view of the world and of our life in particular. And when we're in that sympathetic response, we have a much smaller view. And physiologically, that's on purpose, right? We can focus on what danger is right in front of us. But that doesn't work for these big questions. And, you know, a big piece it's a piece that we'll talk about in a minute around working with practices that help you move into your parasympathetic system so you can ask the big questions. But some of the reason that we're in that stress response, some of it might be just immediate stress, and some breathing and relaxation techniques can help. But it's also really important that we start to notice what our individual situation is, because our stress may be that we don't have enough sleep, but our stress could also be because we are playing a negative self-belief over and over in our head, another one of those neural pathways that tells us that we're actually not smart enough to make the money we want to make, or whatever our limiting belief is. So it's why I think it's so important to, yes, get into that parasympathetic response, but then be able to really take in the big picture of what is the underlying cause of this stress. It is not that my daughter can't find her shoes. There is something else going on that is the cause of me being over frustrated by that particular situation. So that's the key. How do you individualize the practice to figure out what you need specifically versus just, I'll do a relaxation technique.
Beautiful. So what is your suggestion for getting started? If somebody is, you know, maybe they've got a few tools in their tool belt, but not really sure how to use them, when to use them, where do you suggest somebody starts when the light bulb is going off right now saying, oh, had one of those arguments this morning. I can see, right?
I think the place to start is always the breath is a really good anchor point, right? Because coming into the breathing helps you to shift that physiological response. Now, certainly there are some people who can become even more anxious by moving into breathing responses. So if you haven't ever done any breath work, it's really important to know that if your anxiety starts to rise, there's lots of different ways to breathe. You don't have to take this, I'm sort of making quotations, yogic breath, whatever your idea of that is. But just being able to slow down the breath a little bit can have an immediate response on your physiology. So there are certainly some tricks. There's some gifts that I'm going to offer that will help with those tricks. There are some places where we tend to hold tension that immediately send a message to the brain to be on alert, like in your jaw. So little tricks like relaxing some of these spaces can help you to start to shift into that parasympathetic response. And if we're really stressed, I think it's helpful to start with a more physical practice so that your mind isn't trying to work anything out. You just try to override the mind for a little bit and make your way into relaxation through the body. That's a nice place to start. But then you have to go the next step, which I'll guide through actually a little bit later in this practice, which is to really notice, what are my thoughts? What are my emotions right now? What sensations stand out? So I call this embodied mindfulness. I'm not suggesting I coined that term, but everybody has a sort of different idea of what that means, because mindfulness just means noticing what's present, noticing this moment without judgment. That doesn't always translate to an embodied experience. I might just notice what's happening in this room around me. I'm talking to you. I might notice the temperature, things like that. But that doesn't mean I notice, what kind of mood am I in right now? Mm. Is there nervousness in my belly? Do I feel a sense of dread somewhere? Is there a background thing saying, are you articulating this in a way people can hear it? Like, we can really settle in a bodily way to what's happening. And that gives us so much information. So for me, embodied mindfulness is really like a process of gathering information so that then I can work with whatever's happening. Otherwise, we're just in a, okay, we moved into a relaxed state, but I haven't actually gathered any information that tells me how I make a shift beyond this moment.
And right. And that's, I mean, there's two goals, right? There's this moment, and then there's everything else, so that I don't have to keep coming back to my relaxation exercise every 10 minutes, right? That word embodiment is really big for me right now, because when I'm talking with people about abundance, you know, if they're people who are first coming into the community, somebody will say something like, I know that. And I'm guilty of it too, right? There are a lot of things that I know that I haven't fully brought into my body, meaning I can actually live from this place, mm-hmm. right? We talk about, I spent a lot of time talking about, we're each of the divine. And that means that we have access to the same resources that everybody has access to the same resources of the divine. We can all access unlimited resources. there's a difference between knowing that intellectually and bringing it into your body and feeling the safety of that, right? Mm-hmm. If we can really bring that into our body and feel it and know it and live from it, completely different than walking around saying, oh yeah, I'm part of the divine. And again, no judgment. Mm-hmm. So anything, I love that concept of embodied mindfulness, so that, because there's so much wisdom in the body, and I think we try to run from it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's accurate? That we, and maybe I'm making too much of it. What do you think?
That's a great question. Do we try to run from it? I think we don't always trust the body, and when we feel uncomfortable, we don't want to feel uncomfortable, right? It's why we binge. It's why we Netflix. It's why we overscroll. It's why we eat too much. You know, there's a million things we overdo. And usually those are because we want to feel distracted from what we're experiencing in the body. There's also discomfort in the mind. But I think we get a little bit more nervous about the body, actually, partly because we're just more familiar with our mind. Oh, there's that thought again. Oh, there's that stressor. And we're used to it. But when we suddenly feel a sinking feeling in our belly, we feel a sense of not okayness or a physical feeling of a lack of safety, we want to dodge that right away. But the truth is, when we hang out with that information, oftentimes it shifts quite quickly. It's not a black hole, but we can feel it as a black hole. And so we want to get out of there. But it's just this wealth of information that I find. It's a little bit of what you just said. Is one of the things I think is there's all kinds of things we know cognitively, but that doesn't mean we've embodied them. And so we wind up in those same loops over and over and over because we haven't made the sort of bodily shift.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, to your point about that sense of, okay, if I have a sinking feeling in my stomach and that feeling of a black hole, I think sometimes that when we don't have tools to deal with those feelings, the idea is it's just going to overwhelm me, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to end up in a fetal position and I'm not going to know how to get out of it.
Yeah.
Right? It can be those feelings, those sensations, if we're not used to checking in with them, can be kind of scary.
Yeah. That's exactly it. We don't have the tools. You think about how much time we spend in school learning tools to figure out life, but we do not learn these basic tools around how our mind, body, and brain work together. We don't use tools or learn tools around how to actually stay present with what's happening in the body. These are not things that we learn. So of course it's uncomfortable. Anything that's unfamiliar makes our brain uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to come back to a phrase that you used, and I will admit this is a personal question. And that is, you used a word, you talked about the vagal tone. And can you say what you mean by that?
Yeah. So the vagus nerve is sometimes called the wandering nerve. It's a very long nerve. It moves from your brain through almost every organ in your body. And when you stimulate the vagus, you stimulate your parasympathetic nervous system response. So it's a word that gets a lot of play lately because we're understanding more and more about that nerve. But really the simplest thing to say is when you stimulate it, wonderful things happen. It makes you feel more calm. It makes you feel more connected. And there's really specific ways to stimulate the vagus nerve. And many of them are through mindfulness practices.
Okay. Beautiful. So I've got one more question before we take a quick break, and then we're going to jump into some exercises, putting all of this into something that people you can actually experience in your body, which I'm really looking forward to. And so my question is it better to have a practice that you do all the time and kind of keep everything kind of status quo? Or is it better to have a practice where you are, that you can use, like when you notice stress coming up? Mm-hmm. Or is it above that?
It's all of the above. I'll tell you, my ideal scenario is this. 60 minutes of some kind of mindfulness meditation practice a week will absolutely change your brain to strengthen that prefrontal cortex and diminish the amygdala fight, flight, freeze response. So if you can get 60 minutes a week in some sort of practice that feels good to you, whether that's a breathing practice, there's a host of meditation practices. And my ideal is that I choose a meditation practice, whether that's 10 minutes a day or 20 minutes a few times a week. I choose one that I know will kind of fit my needs for the day. And that just takes a little bit of time to figure out. And I think it's really important to have a couple of pauses throughout the day, even if they're only for 2 minutes, just to check in. So that meditation practice is going to really have an effect on the big picture, but those pauses are what give you a moment to say, oh, I'm hungry. I have been ignoring the needs of my body, or, oh, I'm feeling super freaked out about this conversation I'm having later. I've been scrolling in order to avoid it. So these pauses, I think, are just as important as having a regular practice that kind of generally creates more well-being in your mind, body, and brain.
Mm, beautiful. I love the fact that it can be, you're not telling us we have to have 60 minutes daily, because that's where I thought you were going. Yeah. And I'm sure, more isn't always better, but there are places I'm sure where more often, depending on what's going on in life, can be helpful. But that's a really doable number, yeah. Right? 10 minutes a day plus your two pauses. Fantastic.
Yeah. And those 10 minutes can be before bed. Like, it doesn't have to be at 6 a.m. I'm up, I'm sitting up straight. Like that, I just throw those rules right out the window. Those 10 minutes can look really different to suit your needs.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, we have to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to jump into some practices, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, all right. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break. Please come back, and we will be back in just a few minutes.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to transformationtalkradio.com or visit Susan's website at susandolce.com.
Have you ever felt like if you just had the right tools and resources, you'd be able to carve a path toward the life your heart is aching for? Guess what? You have everything you need inside you. I'm Natasha Ornedo, and I'm here to show you that your healing is in your hands. Tune into my show, Unlock the Healing Path, every second and fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on transformationtalkradio.com. To learn more about me and my work, visit natashaornedo.com.
The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens, with monthly guest host Karen Benton. Tune in for powerful conversations about health and wellness. Karen brings unique insights rich with humor and science to her discussions with experts in medicine, movement, psychology, spirituality, and so much more. Don't miss Karen on The Truth is Funny every third Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
We're back on Soul Wisdom Abundance with me, your host, Jennifer Bloom, and my guest, Rachel Posner. And we have been talking all about mindfulness and stress and money and why it's important to have a regular practice. So we are going to have some fun in the second half, and I'm going to ask Rachel to start us off by doing an exercise that can put everything that you've been hearing about the first half into practice. But before we do that, Rachel, can you share with the listeners where they can find you? I mean, there'll be information in the show notes, but what's the best way for them to learn more about you and the work that you bring to the world?
The easiest way is just to go to rachelposner.com.
Simple, easy peasy.
Rachelposner.com. That's where most of the information is, yeah.
Yep, and I know
ways for you to send me an email, contact me however you'd like.
Super. And I know you've got a couple of free gifts, if you want to share just a little bit about those.
Okay. I talked a little bit about some like little tricks to turn on your parasympathetic response. So I have a free gift that walks you through a practice that just helps you to do that. It gives you, it's more of a physical practice. Again, you don't have to think about anything. You just walk through relaxing the muscles in your face, placing a hand on your heart, little ways to turn on that parasympathetic response. And then I also have a free gift, a class that you can take with me next Tuesday. If you register for it, you'll also get the recording. And that class really walks you through more information around individualizing your mindfulness practice to suit your specific needs.
Beautiful. A couple of really good tools. You know, I signed up for your free offer just this morning, and I'm excited to read through it because yesterday I had something happen and I had to write. There was something I needed to do for business, and I was scattered. I was stressed. And I have a whole toolbox of tools, but I needed something physical. And so I'm really excited about going through the five different ways. I think that would have been helpful yesterday. So I'm going to encourage everybody to take a moment and receive that information from Rachel, because it's life changing, truly. Okay, so now that we've talked about it, let's practice. So what would you like to walk us through?
I would love to walk you through this idea of taking a pause that we were talking about just before the break. And this will be kind of an extended pause. So just know, yes, I said take a couple of pauses throughout the day just to check in. And you can absolutely do that in a couple of minutes. This will be a sort of extended pause, so you can get just a better picture of what a more extensive check-in can offer you.
Super.
So you can do this in any posture you like. I just suggest you get comfortable. You can get as comfortable as you like in a chair. I'm not going to tell you to sit up straight or to breathe in a particular way. Just find yourself into a shape that feels relaxed and that feels like if you wanted to, you could take an expansive breath. And you might have gone right there and then realized, actually, I need to fidget a little bit more. I'm not quite comfortable. So give yourself a chance to get another 10% more comfortable. And once you arrive, you can either close your eyes or soften your gaze. And when I say soften your gaze, I just mean don't make eye contact with me. Like, find yourself in your own space, whether that's gazing down or eyes closed, whatever's more comfortable. And start by noticing on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your stress level? You don't have to overthink it. And then notice the way that you're breathing. Again, there's nothing you have to change, but you might just notice, does my breath feel satisfying or not? And if not, is there anything I could do that might make it feel a little more satisfying? Now shift your awareness into your physical body and notice any sensations that stand out. They might be pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Just notice what's happening in your body right now. Again, you don't need to do anything about it. You're just gathering information. And now notice your emotional body. What kind of mood are you in? Is there an emotion present? There might be a word or a quality that describes what you're feeling on that more emotional level. Let's notice what pops into your awareness. And now shift to your mental body. Kinds of thoughts are moving through. Does your mind feel calm or scattered or quick moving? And then shift to your spiritual body. whatever that means to you, what's present in your spiritual body. And as you make your way through those layers of the body, from your physical body to your emotional body, your mental body, your spiritual body, notice if there's anything that stood out for you. Just choose one. Maybe there were a bunch of things, but just choose one thing that sort of raised your curiosity. And then bring your awareness back to that. Give yourself a little bit more time to explore that. And by explore, you might notice when you focus on that one thing, thoughts or emotions or images or sensations that arise. Just notice what's present when you focus in on that one thing that's put out. Does it feel connected to a place in your body? Even if it's not physical, just notice. If so, bring your awareness into that particular place in your body. If that doesn't resonate, just let yourself kind of drift towards the space in your body that feels friendly or wise. And again, bring your awareness back into that particular physical area, holding this awareness of what stood out. And as you explore that area, again, just noticing sensations or emotions or thoughts or images that arise. And ask that place in your body as if it could speak. And sometimes the body speaks in words, sometimes images, sometimes emotions or thoughts. It doesn't matter how it communicates. But ask that place in your body, is there anything else you need to know about that thing that stood out? Maybe that space has one little nugget of wisdom for you. And is there some action you could take to act on what you received? It could be as simple as, I need to drink more water. Or as big as, I need to change my particular negative thought process or limiting self-belief. It doesn't matter what it is. Just one small action to act on what you received. And as you imagine yourself in that action, notice how it feels. Notice how it feels in your body to drink that water or to have a moment of gratitude. And even though it's still just in your imagination, feel it nourishing you. Feel the implications that simple action could have, the effects that that simple action could have on your day. And now notice on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your stress level? And when you're ready, slowly bring yourself back into a more conscious in this world space by opening your eyes, lifting your gaze, feeling the space around you, taking any little movement that your body might need after sitting still for that length of time.
Oh, wow. That was fantastic. That was fantastic. I really appreciated going through each of the layers. And it was really fun because, you know, before, you know, I'm hosting, right? I'm holding space for this conversation. And there's a number of things I do before I step into a conversation like this. And I noticed that I took a stuff, things I'm thinking about, the to-do list, all the mind stuff. And I see where I stick it. And it was like right back here, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I noticed is I brought my attention back there. But what I noticed was that I don't have to pick it back up, right? It's a sort of this thought of, I have to come back to all of the whatever. I got a really beautiful message of just like letting it go. Cause I was sort of wearing it like a cape as opposed to just, you know, I can make a list and I can let the rest of it go. It was such a freeing feeling to have that. I'm feeling really lovely.
I love the imagery of the cape. So one of the things that's so beautiful about these kinds of experiences is your brain doesn't really differentiate between reality and imagination. It's not that you don't know what's what, but in terms of creating neural pathways, reinforcing pathways that support the states we want to explore, we want to be experiencing more often. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing that in your imagination or out there in the world with other people around. So when you go through that experience of going all the way from the beginning, noticing what's happening and then addressing something that is happening, and then imagining yourself addressing that. So that imagination is sort of a plan for what you're going to do later, but you're already creating a neural pathway around that plan. And so you're already actually receiving some nourishment by imagining it. And you're also setting yourself up to be more successful in terms of actually following through, because you already have a kind of familiarity with the action that you're planning. So it's really important to notice what's happening, but it's just as important to actually acknowledge an action that you could take. And in acknowledging that action and following through, you're creating a deeper relationship between your mind, your body, and your brain. And your mind and brain are getting more comfortable with that feeling of being in your body. It's like reminding your mind and your brain, it's okay to be here. And actually, we all feel better when we spend some time in the body and then acknowledge what we're noticing and act on that. So that the whole process, it's really like a 360 process, and each piece is really important. It's not to say that you won't gain something from doing just that beginning piece. If that's what you have time to do, check in, right? That's better than nothing for sure. But even a brief check-in that just tells you, oh, I need 2 minutes of walking around the room before I get on the next Zoom call. That can have really big, really big kind of repercussions or positive results.
Yeah. And I would imagine too, that the more practiced you get in taking the pauses, the more that your body will tell you, hello, let's take a pause, right? Mm-hmm. Or I have something I want to share with you, mm-hmm. right? So that regular practice is important. And then you get but it also starts the momentum of information flowing from your body, because it's like you're telling it, hey, I'm curious. I really want to hear what you have to say to me.
Right. And it's that information that helps you to create a more individualized mindfulness practice. So then when you go back to that 60 minutes a week, you have more information to bring with you. Oh, I see. I'm lacking. I've been really hard on myself the last few days. I need to do a compassion practice. Mm. Or I haven't gotten enough sleep. I really need to do a deep relaxation practice to bring in a little bit more energy. So it's these pauses that for me really help me to see when I wake up in the morning or whenever it is I'm going to do that 10-minute practice. Those inform that practice for me.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. That is such an it's deceptively simple. Right. And I think we dismiss things that are deceptively simple, but when you actually do it, and if we each made an agreement to do it on, you know, okay, today and for 7 days, right. I'm going to do that. You know, just the powerful impact it could have.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's one of my action steps. So I am going to invite those of you who are listening who that sounds like it would be fun, and let me know. I'm curious what happens for each of you as you introduce this into your day-to-day life. So thank you again, Rachel. That's fantastic. Okay, so we're going to switch gears a little bit, and you know, one of the things, and I'm really glad that we did it in this order, because when the body, and my experience of this, my body did relax. It was funny because at the very beginning, I have a issue in my hip. And when we first checked in with the body, it started to glare. Like I thought, uh-oh, how am I going to get through this? But with the additional relaxation, it's like that went into the background. But anyway, from this quieter body space, we can become aware of some of the beliefs, some of the kind of things that are usually unconscious to us, patterns can come in. And one of the tools that I really enjoy using, and those of you who have listened to the podcast before know that I talk about soul languages and then our sacred partnership with money languages, because these are tangible ways that we can connect with divinity, tangible ways that we can connect with parts of ourselves to receive more information. And when we take the time to quiet the body first, the connection can be a lot easier. More information tends to flow. And then we can also get, when we learn about ourselves in this way, when we understand our personal soul languages and those are personal soul languages, that is a paradigm that says it's 107 different voices of soul. And we brought three of those with us to the planet. And we also brought three different languages to support us in our relationship with money. And when we understand these languages, we can understand some of our patterns that we accidentally fall into when we are unconsciously using that energy, and patterns that we are in when we are consciously using that energy. So when we learn more about ourselves and we understand, oh, wait a minute, all that's going on right here is I'm disconnected, right? If we do that check-in and something comes up. So for example, one of my money languages is Troubadour, which is all about using the energy of the voice to weave what's possible, right? So if I notice that I'm feeling kind of low, I might notice, hey, wait a minute, I'm telling a story that I don't like here, right? But instead of that being something that's bad about me, I get to go, all I am is disconnected here, right? I get to reconnect, and now I can tell the story of what it is that I want, and now I'm in that better feeling place, right? So what I would love to do for you is to identify one of your money languages and give you the description, and we'll see what resonates and what might come up for you based on the information. Is that still okay?
Yeah, great.
Okay. So the way that these languages are identified is I make a one-time connection with your soul, and then I muscle test for which energies you brought forward. So it's your soul giving me that information. Mm-hmm. And I also ask, for the purposes of the conversation today, what's the best, or what would be the most fun to talk about. So we are going to talk about the axiom of translation. In the money language world, what that is the energetic how for you of creating money. So there's, right, when there's money, there's both the energy side and then there's the actual physical doing. This mm-hmm. category is all about, okay, what's the energetic how? And for you, this is called nurturer. So let me tell you a little bit about this language. This sacred partnership language gives you the skill of nurturing money into being. This language guides you to understand that it is easier to create from a full well rather than an empty tank. Nourishing and filling yourself brings an abundance of nourishment from the divine, and money is one way of allowing nourishment. Filling your tank and being an example to others, or literally helping others fill their tanks, is your how of making money. So a couple of the ways you would know that you are in conscious connection, and there's more, I'll read a couple of these and I'll send you the full description. But when you're in connection, things you're going to notice about this energy is that you intuitively know that money is simply one way to create nurturing. You know that you and the divine are the only players involved in creating money. And you are intimately aware of the giving and receiving cycle with money. If you're disconnected, some of the things you might notice is that you don't want to receive money for nurturing, or you refuse to receive money until everyone else around you has enough. Ignoring money because you don't feel the heart of it, or money feeling hard because you don't feel the heart of money. So as you listen, tell me what comes up for you. How does that resonate?
That feels exactly like me. Like there's not one thing about that that doesn't resonate, both on the connection and the disconnection front. Mm-hmm. I've had periods of time where money feels difficult because it's true that what I do is nourish and nurture. And sometimes there has been feelings of, should I be paid for that? And I think sometimes that comes out of, there's a sort of, I think of it as soul work. I know when I'm doing my Dharma. I know when I'm doing what I'm here to do. And there has been times where there's been a mixed message like, well, soul work should be a giveaway. And I don't feel that anymore. I have definitely moved out of that. But I'm sure that there are sometimes there can be a little tug on me around that. That was kind of a big money piece to work on, that soul work is not, in fact, a giveaway. And that money is just one of many ways that we find reciprocity. So that just totally aligns both the disconnect and the connected part.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? There are, the thing about money is we've been living and breathing money since we were, well, my belief, in utero, and actually before, right? Again, in my belief system. And there are so many pieces that just aren't true, or they aren't true anymore. And it's just really fascinating what happens when we get caught up in those things that aren't true for us. And the again, that stress level, right, to kind of weave it back into the conversation, if we are going against what our brain thinks is truth, our body then says, you're not safe. So if you're if you're holding that belief that soul work shouldn't be paid for, and you're charging, you're literally going to create stress and strain within your being, right? Because your brain is like, it's like a danger signal, right?
Yeah.
I
also think there's a piece of the reciprocity around, if your work is to nourish and nurture and support, and you're not, in terms of the disconnect, and you're not also doing that for yourself, then you are also missing a piece of that giving, receiving, which is another thing that creates a kind of money block. Like, you have to walk the talk.
You do. Right. And that whole, and while this is your language, there is so much to share with others around it. Right. And I think it's actually a really good place to wrap it up here. Uh-huh. In that the way to create is from that full well. We have to create that full well for ourselves. And there are so many ways to do that. But, as we take the time to figure out what works individually best for us, we get to fill that well in a way that feels really good to us. And the way I do it might be a little different than you and somebody else. But the whole point here is to start with that full well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rachel, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your wisdom, for taking your time with us. Your exercise was beautiful. It brought everything together. I'm really delighted. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. It was such a pleasure. It really was.
Fantastic. So again, I'm going to ask people to go and visit rachelposner.com, and you can learn all about her offerings and what she brings, because I know that it's worldwide. You can take advantage of her services. And thank you all for being here for Soul Wisdom Abundance. If you want to go deeper with me, one of the best ways to do that is connect with me on Instagram. I'm at soul.abundance, and DM me if you have questions or tell me about what your experience was like today. I would love to know more about it. And Soul Wisdom Abundance is here the first and third Fridays of every month. And we're going to dive deeper actually into this concept of embodiment next week. So this was a really good first part of the conversation, and it'll be fun to do that second. So until we meet again, I offer every one of you prosperous blessings. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about Jennifer Bloom or listen to past shows, visit jenniferbloom.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on any of your favorite podcasting outlets. Simply search Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.